Fred Film Radio, Karlovy Vary International Film Festival, Czech Republic.
Fred Film Radio, I'm Matt McCucci from the 49th Karlovy Vary International Film Festival, and it's a great pleasure to have Jeff Price here with us, who is presenting the film Lowdown in the official selection competition here at the festival. So thanks very much for taking the time and joining us.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
All right, so would you like to tell our listeners what the film is about?
Sure. Lowdown is about a kid growing up in Los Angeles in the 1970s, who's played by Elle Fanning in the film, based on a real-life story of Amy Jo Albanese. Mm. And it's her coming of age, but being raised by a father who is a jazz musician and leads a very compromised life, problems with the law and with drugs, and these things all complicate matters.
And we should specify before we get into the film that Amy Jo Albanese is actually was involved in the project. So did she get involved from the start, and how did that help with the production of the film?
You know, this is my first feature narrative film. I've made feature films, feature length films, worked on feature documentaries, have made feature films that are of a more abstract nature. And feature filmmaking, I learned so much doing this regarding collaboration and how collaborative it is, and at the same time how strange it is to have the singular position of a director. But I think this film, you could say, was mainly a collaboration with Amy Jo Albanese.
Okay.
And it started about 10 years ago when I met her, and I had a kind of intuition about her. She was a member of my crew on a film shoot, small film shoot that I was doing, and she seemed like someone that has led a life that's so rich in narrative, kind of broadcasts the narrative in ways that is virtually tangible. Mm-hmm. And she's this sort of person. But she's also a little unapproachable. She protects herself, has a most beautiful family now, two great kids, works in film, is a very successful writer. Anyway, she was listening to a Chet Baker record on a boombox.
Yeah.
And because I photographed Chet Baker for almost a year on a documentary called Let's Get Lost,
sure, yeah,
I thought I could introduce myself as someone that knew Chet Baker. And I tried it, and she was so unimpressed. And she more or less told me,
yeah, hit the road, Jack.
Hit the road. Like, who cares? I knew Chet Baker, too. I said, really? How did you know Chet Baker? And she said, oh, well, my dad played with him. And I said, who's your dad? And she goes, you've never heard of him? And I'm not telling you, and let's just end the conversation. And I put my hands together, and I said, please, just say his name, because I'm a crazy jazz fan, and who knows? And she said, Joe Albanese. And Amy's dad is a little-known jazz musician who is very important. And it so happens that I was a fan of his music and had seen him perform and had the one record that he made between 1947 when Charlie Parker fired him and the late 70s when he had his comeback in Europe. And I said, I was so excited. And Amy went, wow, in my entire life, on only one prior occasion did a non-musician randomly know who my dad was. And she just started then opening up and telling me these stories.
Wow.
And I have to tell you, this was a period of my life that was so precious. I'm sad that it's over.
Right.
It was a time we weren't thinking about making a movie. I wasn't thinking about anything. I was just so lucky to be in the presence of someone that had so much history and could distill it so poetically. And she could, every sentence she spoke was like a perfect story. And eventually this became the memoir, which was done on a antique manual typewriter, because that's the way Amy is. She is from another time.
Yeah.
And that became the screenplay, and that's how the whole thing began.
Well, it adds like an element of intimacy, and it makes the whole work even more personal, and I think as viewers we're privileged to actually see that on the screen.
Mm.
So you said that you're a jazz fan, and obviously another thing that I could admire, being kind of someone who likes to play music on the side as well. Mm. I thought the representation of the musician, of the character of the musician, was very good, very interesting. So how did you construct that whole world of jazz, being a fan yourself and the jazz scene?
No, thank you. It's it was so important, especially with Amy, it was so important for me to take her story and treat it with the most care I could. I was so honored that she put this trust in me to carve the story possibly for some time. Amy is a great scholar of music, and I love music so much. It's so important to me, and in my filmmaking practice, it maybe is the most important thing to me. And I also came of age in the 70s at that time. So Amy and I both, I think we wanted to produce a film that was a narrative based not on history, but based on memory. We almost purposefully didn't research the 70s.
Yeah.
Because what happens when you research is you find all of the things that were singled out. And everything that's singled out is unique and then, by definition, not the way the time was.
Sure, it becomes a gimmick.
And we wanted to really use our impressions of the 70s, which is, I think, a lot lower key than the way the 70s gets represented in a lot of film. And we also made a choice right on that we had to shoot on film. That this was a film impossible to make with digital cinema.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it would be a collision of two times. They wouldn't marry. They wouldn't nest together. I don't know. Then all the elements came together. Then it was, as you say, the John Hawkes came on.
Yeah, he's great, by the way.
And
he's amazing.
It was a miracle that John was the actor to eventually play Joe. And John said to me, "This is the most difficult part I've ever taken because it's the most different than who I am as a person." John is a musician, but he's not a jazz musician. And he's not a piano player. And John will go, he's so disciplined, and he brings so much devotion and dedication to what he does, and he also won't settle for anything short of the best, that of something really perfect.
Yeah.
And we worked very hard to make not only the musical scenes plentiful, but to make them exacting so that jazz musicians could watch the movie and swear that the musicians are really playing and that John was really playing.
Yeah.
And never being shy about showing him playing. I remember at the beginning thinking, is this even going to work? What if it doesn't work? Should we look into something like digital head replacement or, you know? And there was nothing else. It was the only way to do it was through acting. And John worked with our Ohad Talmor, who was sort of the musical director of the film. And Ohad is a great jazz musician in his own right and a big Joe Albany fan and a fan of Amy's writing. And he, for years, had been studying Joe's solos, knowing that eventually there would come a time when he would have to train an actor.
No way.
Yeah. And
it's extraordinary how all these things just came together like that. It's really rare to hear that.
It was miracle after miracle.
There you go.
And it sounds corny, but it's true.
We're going to take a short break, but we'll be right back with Jeff Price, and we're talking about his film Lowdown from the 49th Carlo Vivari International Film Festival. And this is Fred Film Radio, the Festival Insider. We're back with Jeff Price, who's talking about his film Lowdown from the 49th Carlo Vivari International Film Festival. It's not only about the music; it's also about like these themes that are over. It's like the dramatic themes that it deals with. One of these is very delicate theme of drug addiction that is always kind of treated. How can we put it? Like
pornographically,
but yeah, that's perfect. Yeah, yeah. How did you realize what approach you should have used to actually portray this?
Well, I think that we were taking a perspective of really caring about the character Joe and loving him and having to deal with both the truth of his faults and his failures, but accepting that in a way that you'd have to accept that really about any person. It's funny, in jazz, there's a lot of mythology about drugs in jazz. Also very dangerous mythology and romanticized in a way that I find not helpful.
Oh, the vast majority of music biopics as well, too, I have to say.
Yes, that always have to sort of show...
It's like there's two films. There's the music and the drug addiction.
And the drug, and there always has to be the kind of a melodramatic reason. And there is no reason that anyone could ever know for Joe. And we didn't want to judge him, and we also didn't want to gawk at him. Yeah. And I think what's interesting is that people still find the way we do witness Joe's relationship with drugs, people still find difficult. And I think they find it difficult for a different reason, because we're absolutely discreet. There's nothing on the screen that's shown. But I think people do kind of settle into the perspective of Amy's emotion towards it. And so they come out of the film and they say, wow, that was so difficult. But I think it was difficult really from the daughter's perspective.
Yeah, yeah. Important to say that actually mm-hmm. the film is from the daughter's perspective.
Yes.
And there's always, and another thing about the film is like there's always like dangers hidden away in this kind of, well, it's kind of like an Alice in Wonderland, if you pardon the comparison.
No, absolutely. Listen, there was actually, we opened the film with a quote from Davis Grubb from the novel Night of the Hunter that was adapted to the film.
Yeah.
But there was a moment, there's some screenplay in there somewhere that had a Lewis Carroll quote that went beside it. And I love the Alice in Wonderland image, because the film is sort of divided into two halves. In the first half, Amy is, kind of borderline 12, 13 and borderline pubescent. And I think because we're dealing with memory and identity and point of view, mm-hmm. that we wanted that section of the film to play a little bit more dreamlike and almost kind of like a series of fables. By the way, I want to say, Davis Grubbs, was a friend of Joe Albany's.
So, yeah.
And Joe had a very literary world that he belonged to. Terry Southern was one of his best friends.
Oh, right.
And Joe, this is another thing, Joe was a very brilliant man, and it was very important for us to make a portrait of a jazz musician who spoke with some, who was poor, but was sophisticated and cultured. And it's funny because I think that in a lot of films, I hate to explain things by negative example, but in a lot of films, if there's a monetary line of that strata of poverty, it's hard to represent it as being intelligent and cultured.
Yes.
And so this was very important for us to show Joe as that kind of a person.
And I was going to ask that because we've talked about John Hawkes, but of course the cast is amazing. It's an amazing cast. How did they come together? I mean, we talked about this film was a collaborative effort, and
yeah.
But you've got some great performers in there. You got Glenn Close, you got Elle Fanning, Caleb Landry-Jones mm-hmm. is in there as well.
Yeah, sure. And Peter Dinklage and Lena Headey.
Yeah.
I'm getting a chill right now thinking about it.
And it's the feature narrative debut, so it's...
We can get to corny metaphysics again to explain it.
Go ahead.
But I think the real reason is, well, for one thing, our producers, Mindy Goldberg and Ron Yurtza and Albert Berger, they all have very great reputations, and Albert and Ron have their company Bonafide. And it's a beloved culture, what all the films they've produced. And I think people are supporting them, and every actor wants to know what they're doing. And so that's step one. And then the second thing is Amy's language. The screenplay's by Topper Lillian and Amy Jo Albany. But the language is very much directly from Amy. And I think actors read it, and they wanted to bring their best to that.
Yeah, every line has a story, like you mm-hmm. mentioned earlier. We touched on it before. You shot this film on actual film, mm-hmm. you know, it's which is rare to say because there's a lot of digital going on, but it really contributes to the look of the film, you know. And I was just wondering, how was that? How was the actual technical aspect of the film? How was it?
Well, I'm also a director of photography.
Yeah, I was going to mention that you've got a background in
and I love shooting film procedurally, and so do the actors. One thing that surprised me is every single actor expressed tremendous gratitude when they heard it was on film. I thought, that's interesting. What vested interest is there that they're aware of? And I think it's two things. I think one is that it produces a kind of value to the time that the camera's rolling. And it heightens the value of that bracket of time that is their time.
Yeah.
And the other thing, and I don't know that they would be able to say this, but I think it's intuited, that their performances are nested into film in a way that doesn't happen in digital. Digital doesn't provide a nest.
They're captured more organically.
Right. That digital is almost like looking through a scope and seeing the act as if it's happening for the first time, which is kind of stunning. But it can get in the way of the material transcending its documentary meaning.
Yeah.
And turning into an autonomous narrative. And I just think film is generous to the story in that way.
Yeah.
And it makes every performance nest together in a way that I think is, it can happen in digital, of course, but it's challenging to achieve that.
And, okay, so...
I mean, sad, a great filmmaker who has a retrospective here, Ben Rivers, who shoots only film.
On film, yeah.
And I was saying to him that I'm in a despair of the, the corroding infrastructure of laboratories and technicians.
He used to develop the film himself, too.
Yes, like, he does. All his black and white is hand-developed. His films are amazing.
Yes.
And he said, yes, but for every lab that closes, two small ones are opening, and they're mobbed with work.
That's optimistic. Mm-hmm. That's really good to hear. Well, thanks very much for joining us. And I know this. I said this interview would be like 10 minutes long.
I wish it could go on all day. And it's really such a pleasure and an honor. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Thanks very much. Absolutely. And this is Fred Film Radio, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on Fred.fm and smartphone apps.